If he has changed his mind on that, I'm not sure about that, whatever. The bottom line about is that the county, Westchester County, is purchasing these machines, and they are the ones, the software that's in here, the $390,000 worth of software is coming through the county's IT department, which was a cheaper methodology.
And I recall that
we had that testimony from these individuals. The Board of Elections sent has sent us the communication that included the state saying that we are under consent order to move forward on this particular thing. And I'm not sure what the additional issues there are, but at this point in time, Mr. Chairman, if someone would like to vote either no or without prejudice, I would put it in front of the members, let them vote on it, and we will look for this particular item for the county executive. And if it does not come from the county executive, I will pull it from the agenda this evening.
I have I commit
to recommit it too.
I have questions about the operation of this. I want to know, is EMS going to come down? And are we privatizing our elections now? EMS is going to be programming these machines for us?
No, they're not.
These are the kinds of questions I want to hear.
But we have had the Board of Elections here, Mr. Abernathy.
We went to the Board of Elections.
And they're not here because who's going to be doing the EMS?
Why are we getting EMS?
You have to have the EMS to program the machines.
Right. That's my point. So we're privatizing the programming.
No, we're not.
Our people are going to do the programming.
Our people are being trained.
Right.
Well, it says installation services. It doesn't say...
The installation of the software and hardware at 450 Sawmill River Road is...
Do we have a breakdown on this as to how these monies are being expended?
We do. It is here. It's in the bond act.
It's not a breakdown.
It is a breakdown.
Is there a guy?
Trying to follow the money.
Okay.
First of all, I appreciate, Mr. Abernathy is making, I think, an important procedural point. We all can agree on the substance and the facts are this. It's almost a ministerial act in one way because the board's already bought the machines. You can go down the line.
Right.
But procedurally, there's a way of doing things, and giving the county executive to 4 p.m. to sign it. Just say, we're meeting now. You could have signed it at 10 a.m. if he's going to sign it. I appreciate what the chairman is saying.
Well, we're committed. But again,
we can do this with a lot of things. We work here, and then we'll get a letter. There's no one really to talk to. But let me get back on the dollars. It looks like in 2006, we appropriated $4 million.
We need it.
And so now, but looking at the five-year capital program, appropriated $4 million. 2009, 10, 11, all zeros. Now, this $2 million now, is this... on top of the four, so it's $6 million, and it's why
part of
it. So it's part, but then it looks like
it looks like
we already appropriated $4 million. So we've already had.
We cannot make a capital budget amendment without the county executive sending out a capital budget amendment.
We've already. If this $2 million is part of the four,
we've appropriated the $4 million. Right. We haven't bonded income, so we're bonding 2.2.
So we're bonding to. Well, how we say it was appropriate. Where
was the question is, why is it not listed in 2010? Don't we have to put it in the 2010 budget, capital budget?
Right, I'm looking at this $4 million. When we say it was appropriation to that, I mean, we don't have an appropriations committee, an authorization committee, right?
It was appropriated as part of the capital budget in 2000.
So we passed the capital budget,
which included
2006. There's $4 million in it. So now we're coming to spend the first two of the four.
But I don't understand why it's not here.
I'm just looking. 2010, it wasn't programmed to spend anything. We appropriated. It's already been all appropriated. So this needs to be changed. All right, so the two of the four...
Can I rephrase your question? The question is, do we need a capital budget amendment to spend this? Is somebody here from budget to answer that question?
Yes, no, you do not.
So it can be spent the way it's appropriate.
Yeah, correct.
And we didn't, and quite frankly, what we asked, and I was through you, Mr. Chairman, I will ask our county attorneys, and I see two of them there. We requested whether or not we needed to wait for the county executive's transmittal letter or to put it on appropriately that would come through the chair, and then we would deal with it. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I'm not happy with the procedure, but let me make it clear again. So this is the whole enchilada. This is buying machines and the privacy boot, the whole package that we need, software, hardware, that big picture, our share, we approved $4 million in 2006. We're simply spending two towards the four. Are we satisfied? We'll be capped at the four? Is there any intention to come back? Or is this $4 million that we had originally planned? Are we still within, budget?
Yes, ours this says.
Okay. All right, so I mean, the $4 million is there. This is two and the four.
And Bob.
But the procedure's not right. Tom's right on that.
Yes. We are not bypassing procedure. There's a rush on this because we need to run proper elections, people. And we bought a building that is currently in the process of being equipped so that we can do this. Hava, it's a mandate. And then we can't ignore it. Yeah.
The whole purpose of this is because the Board of Elections called us and told us that the way things were going, unless they got the software, that they didn't know whether they'd be prepared for September election. So we pushed it through. I've spoken to Reggie all last week to get this legislation through so we would have this software so when they complete this new building that they're putting down there, that they'd be able to test it. So Reggie has already signed off on this. He might not have put his signature on this, but he certainly worried about it, and he's the guy that's pushing this, because he said if we don't get it going on the agenda tonight, that we're going to have some problems.
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
It just seems to me that obviously the Board of Elections Commissioners, whether some of us agree or disagree, they made a decision to buy these machines like 2 years ago now, whatever. It's a while ago. So what I don't understand, I'm not trying to point blame, but between the last administration and this administration, the machines were purchased at the commitment a year and a half, 2 years ago. Why wasn't this bonding, you know, done 6 months ago or 2 weeks ago?
As a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, it was.
Okay,
and
okay.
It was done last week,
yeah.
And we stopped it because we had additional questions. We had a visit that was scheduled at the Board of Elections where both Carol Lee Sunderland and Reggie Lafayette brought in the technical people. They actually brought in the Dominion software people as well to give us a presentation. That was in, I want to say it was in November, right?
October, November.
When we went, we had a meeting over there.
March
1st,
we're blue sheeting. Right. So this is October and March. It's 6 months from when we did that.
Well, the reality again is that, the reality again, how this started, just so in fairness to the members, is that Mr. Boland brought it up because of the email string that he had passed out, right? And the Board of Legislators was being blamed for the delay, and which we said the reality is we did not have a bond act in front of us to act upon. And that's how we got to the place where Mr. Colty, the deputy commissioner over there, was on the phone with Reggie Lafayette and the Republican technicians, the Democratic technicians, and explaining to us the need to have this stuff move forward as quickly as possible. The administration certainly has the right and the responsibility to do that as well, but the board did its due diligence with our complete finance team in a meeting with this to get this bonding done. And I personally want to thank Mr. Boland for working through with law and doing the things that were absolutely necessary to get this documentation and the bond act in a shape that we could have it in front of both us and the administration for, I believe it was Thursday in the afternoon when Mr. Boland walked it personally upstairs to get them to sign off on it. The county executive was not in town until Thursday, and that may have caused a different delay, but the paperwork was physically walked upstairs to have the county administration review it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think that is my point here. I am very concerned, as I read the email, the email of February 17th from Anna Spizzero, wherever she is.
She's from the New York State Board of Elections.
She wrote to the Westchester Board of Elections and asked, what is the status of compliance? And the response from the commissioners to her, and I can't tell who wrote it back, it says, "Hi, Anna. As previously indicated in our email response to the EMS survey on January 15th, 2010, Westchester County's EMS purchase status remains the same. We have not sent in a requisition to Dominion for the EMS system. The warehouse where the EMS system will be stored is not yet ready. And the Westchester County does not intend to order EMS
system. Does intend to order the EMS system.
I'm sorry, you're right. This does intend to order in 2010. As of this date, it hasn't been ordered, and we can't give you an exact date as of this time. We'll keep you updated once the status changes. Okay? There's nothing further from them.
Yes, sir.
All right, the next one says, hi, Anna, I'm aware. We are all, yeah, it's backwards. Okay, I'm sorry. So on February 20th,
because Anna got back to them and said...
All right, Carolee and I are aware of the urgency. We are also aware that there's no provision in the law to allow the vendor to configure out ballots this year. So what does that mean? So who's going to configure the ballots?
That without the software, they have a contract with Dominion to do it now. That's how they program...
So then we are going to allow an outside company to configure the ballots this year.
No. The whole idea is for us to get this approved so that they would be able to program it themselves, which is what they are supposed to do under HAVEM. If they receive the software in this timely manner, they
I
are
I don't think so. I think what they're doing here is bringing Dominion in to program the software.
Dominion.
But I find this difficult to ask these questions and get answers when there's nobody here to answer.
I know, but Tom, if I may, out of respect, we went over there and we asked them all of this.
Who's going to program it?
We are going to program. That's what HAVA says. We have to buy the software. Every time there's an election, we program it. One Republican programmer, one Democratic programmer,
we set up
side by side.
To do that?
Yeah.
We will be
we'll be set up once we do this bond act.
I find it very strange that we don't have election commissioners here to say that on the paper.
We did not.
I've never seen this procedure before where a legislator puts something up. And it's an administrative action that's required. And
right, well, I'm not addressing the procedural.
No, but the
point,
procedural
but
thing
the
is
facts.
The
we did answer all these questions 6 months ago. That's why
well,
we went over there.
In 6 months.
And the fact is, Board of Elections employees do the programming. We buy the software, but for every election, it's Board HAVA dictates that Board of Elections employees do it.
We you have commitments from both chairmen, the chairman of the board and myself, to recommit this item. If it's not the wishes of the county executive to move it forward, we won't move it.
And I also want to hear from the Board of Elections where they are.
We did not ask them to come here. So, like you said,
how can we do that with
our... You're right.
The documentation that we have here says that they are not, at this point in time, you have the physical documentation that says right now, this second, they cannot do it. Right?
Yeah.
Right? And the only option for them right now is if they cannot do it, because the software is not purchased, they have to do this. Right?
All right. On the motion...
But I don't have anything from the Board of Elections here saying that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All right.
I'm going to do without prejudice because I just walked in.
Yes, without prejudice.
Okay.
Good. All right. I move forward pending the commitment of the chairman and mine.
That's why I did. I know about the issue, Jim.
Mr. Jenkins and I second it. All right. We go back to the top of the agenda here in item 810. Pay plan amendment, director of communications, director of economic development. And from the administration, anybody to present this?
I was advised that our chief staff provided you the documentation and it's relevant to the topic.
Ask him to come down.
Tell him to bring the Board of Elections with him.
If we don't have anybody to present anything, I'm just going to start parking everything. Because he was the request of the chairman, and we did not ask the Board of Elections to come. At least I did.
To be honest, I wasn't even aware that this was going to be the Board of Elections topic was going to be added to this morning. I was here on the call. I was seeing your judgment that it was going to be an added start. By you, maybe I could have...
All right, we're going to move forward to the settlement, item 811.
So what are we doing with it now?
Good afternoon. I was looking at the clock.
You know about this already.
For the record,
My name is Laura Alessio. I'm the Deputy County Attorney in charge of the Litigation Bureau. A11 is requesting settlement of a wrongful death action in amount of $1.9 million. This legislation was presented to the Litigation Subcommittee, and it was recommended that it be passed. This involves a head-on collision at the Bronzeville Parkway at the intersection of Virginia Road. It was a crossover accident where John Young was driving southbound, and the decedent, Gerald Wolf, was driving northbound on the right-hand lane. It was in November in about 2007. The roadway was wet. There's no indication that Dawn Young, who was driving south, was speeding. There was no indication that she was using a cell phone or that there was any alcohol or drugs in her system. She lost control of her vehicle. She crossed over into the northbound lane and basically pinned the decedent's car between the guide rail and her car. He was wearing a seatbelt. His airbag went off. He was crushed into his steering wheel. His chest was crushed. His knees were crushed. He had multiple rib fractures. He was unfortunately conscious for the majority of the time. He had to be extricated from the car. Took emergency services about 10 minutes to get there. Took him about 45 minutes to extricate him. Once he was extricated, he bled out fairly quickly and was pronounced dead at the hospital. Because he was 48 years old, there is a issue for pain and suffering. There's also a big issue for pecuniary loss. He was 48 years old. He had an income of about $80,000 a year. He had a fairly long expected history with regard to working. He was a sole income earner. He had three kids. The driver of the other vehicle had minimum insurance. She turned over her policy of $50,000. His employer, he was a facilities manager in a strip mall on Central Avenue. His employer also had a life insurance policy on him for $825,000. So the estate has already received $875,000. Because of the potential jury verdicts, which go from about $3.5 to $6 million, with regard to the pain and suffering, this case was handled in-house by the county attorney's office, and we were able to negotiate a settlement of $1.9 million. So we are asking the board to approve the settlement of 1.9, which is inclusive of all costs and fees that the county would be responsible to pay on the case.
Members? Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is discussed as part of the case, but you say the driver turned over the policy.
Her policy.
Clearly, the other driver from this analysis was had a certain amount of culpability, right?
The problem with the case was between 2002 and 2007, plaintiff had alleged that the county was on notice that this particular part of the Bronxville Parkway was dangerous. There have been over 30 accidents at this intersection between 2002 and 2007. 13 were crossovers, 3 were fatalities. Of the fatalities, when the crossover occurred, it was a driver who lost control going southbound, and they crossed over into the northbound lane. The county, back in 1998, started to put up median barriers, but we started in the southbound section of the parkway because that was where the traffic was the heaviest. When we got up to approximately where this accident occurred, there were some delays with regard to the implementation of the median barriers. The delays took a couple of years, and plaintiff's counsel is basically saying that we have a duty to keep our roadways safe for the people who travel on our roadways, because there were so many crossover accidents that occurred at that intersection or at or near that intersection for a 5-year period of time, and the county took no interim measures to make that roadway safe. And the irony of the situation is that we were about to commence an $8 million project to put median barriers up there, and it was supposed to start the day of the accident, but because it rained, we postponed it. So there is a strong case that the plaintiff has that the county is on notice of the dangerous condition of the roadway, took no interim measures to make the roadway safer, because it's an historic part of the parkway. There were some issues that we had to deal with internally. That has been resolved. The median barriers are currently on there. That intersection looks great.
So it's been addressed? I'm sorry.
It has been addressed. Yes, it has been addressed. I mean, that's one of the issues why we are strongly urging the $1.9 million settlement, because we think that the potential, should we go to trial, would be significantly higher.
And the rain potentially had something to do with the driver losing control of the car and all that stuff?
Yes.
And in the other, and in the other accidents, it was also rainy and wet, so we were on notice that something needed to be done. Either we could put some kind of a surface on the roadway, or take as an interim measure, or micro something the roadway, or we can take some kind of permanent measure, which we've done.
And again, the subcommittee on mitigation did a look at it. A motion is in order, member. Moved by Ms. Meyer.
Second
by.
I'll second.
Mr. Rabinat.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Item passes. Moving right along, County Attorney, Act Retention of Outside Counsel Deskovic.
Right. Jeffrey Deskovic is a case where the Innocence Project is representing Mr. Deskovic. There are several defendants in the case. There is the County of Westchester, Dr. Hyland, and Dr. Rowe, who was a former deputy county medical examiner. They are being represented currently by Oxen Toulis. There are additional defendants in the case. That involves the Peekskill Police Department because they did the investigation with regard to Jeffrey Deskovic, as well as Putnam County. Those defendants are represented by other counsel, not the County of Westchester. This is the case where Jeffrey Deskovic was convicted of raping and murdering a Peekskill woman. He was sentenced to 15 years to life. His DNA was tested a few years ago, and he was found to be actually innocent of the crime. And then because of advances in DNA, they were actually able to discover who actually did commit the rape and murder. So there's no issue that he is innocent. Now he's filed a civil rights action against the county and against Peekskill and against Putnam. Through the course of discovery, a potential conflict of interest has arisen between Dr. Rowe and the other county defendants, and we are asking that the board approve for the law firm of Legally Platt to represent Dr. Rowe.
Members?
So moved.
Second. Any questions? Your question, I got you.
The subcommittee did deal with this and again recommended that we go forward. There is a, there appears to be a clear conflict of interest because of the position that the county is going to be taking. So we all believe that it's appropriate to have outside counsel. They also explained to us why they chose this firm, and we concurred with that.
All right, all in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Good. Moving right along, County Attorney Act to recover a claim of Medicaid expenses.
Right. The County Attorney's Office is asking for authority from the board to compromise the DSS lien relating to the estate of Mary Pierce. Mary Pierce died in 2008. She was 96 years old at the time. She received medical assistance from DSS from February of 07 through up until the time of her death in August of 08. The Medicaid lien is $97,742. The only asset of her estate was a co-op in Yonkers, which after all the costs were taken out, the net proceeds was $86,834. So our lien is higher than the net asset of the estate. There's only one heir to the estate, which is her son. Her son is also receiving Social Security disability. He alleges that he is permanently and totally disabled. And under DSS rules and regulations, when you're trying to compromise an estate lien, you need to take into consideration if it would cause an undue hardship on the heirs. So taking that into consideration, the fact that he has limited income and he's receiving Social Security and is arguing that he's totally disabled, and the county is right now with the position that he is at least partially disabled, we're able to compromise and accept 50% of the net asset of the estate, which is $35,121. You know, if we were to litigate this, if we were to try and pursue a higher lien, then the estate assets would be dissipated. So we believe that it's in the best interest of the county to accept this compromise.
Again, Mr. Chairman, we had a full discussion and came to the same conclusion that it wasn't worth the additional effort. Because even if we were to get a larger claim, there might not be any money to collect it from. So we're taking the best that we can do at this time.
All right, I think a motion is in order.
So moved. Second.
The second is all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That's it. And
the last issue is a request to increase the national seed amount. the county attorney's office has retained, and your board has approved in the past, the retention of Jackson Lewis to conduct an administrative hearing regarding an attorney in our office. The initial amount appropriated is $20,000. I came back before the board and asked for an additional $20,000. And now we have exceeded that amount of money. The administrative hearing has become much more contentious and much more litigated, and there have been protracted delays because the person is representing himself, which always causes issues. And right now, Jackson Lewis has expended $59,000. There are only two more hearing dates left. One is today. One is the third, which is Wednesday. And then we believe that that should be the end of the hearing other than briefs, although because he's pro se, I really hope I'm right. But in any event, we are asking for an additional $35,000 to be appropriated. We do believe that that should be sufficient to take this hearing to closing.
Again, Mr. Chairman, we had a full discussion of this. We, on all of these items, we also had executive sessions to discuss the strategies.
Brian's,
yeah, on all of the items, so, we...
I would request that you highlight the reasons.
Yeah, well, on all of them, we had executive sessions. We went into the strategy that was being employed. We went into the details of the items, and we again concur with the county attorney's office. We were hopeful that in some cases there might be a way to settle these things differently, particularly this one. One of the peers, again, from the executive session materials, that the county attorney's office strategy is the appropriate one at this time.
I concurred with that, just so you know. I was in the meetings, and this one was quite unfortunate because the facts that led up to where we're at today are quite troubling, but I agree with Tom and the committee and the county attorney that we had no choice but to go down the road we're going.
A motion is in order.
A move.
Second.
Move and second it. All in favor?
All right.
Opposed?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I am.
B2.
George, on the pay plan,
can you do B2 quickly? So really quickly, shouldn't be any discussion.
B2,
Parcel Q.
Sorry. Yeah, Parcel Q, famous Parcel Q.
Oh, Parcel Q first.
Oh. Well, it's the last two items left.
I understand there is no discussion. So. Hmm? My understanding there is, in fact, going to change.
That's not the chairman.
That's contrary to what the chairman.
All right. Then find out if you plan to blue sheet this. Yeah. Mr. Oros, welcome. On the pay plan amendment, Director of Communications and Director of Economic Development.
Correct.
Yep. Please. Well, what happens is there was nobody here to introduce this item, Mr.
Well, we spoke about it, I guess, 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
I supplied the information, I believe, that was requested, which was a list of all current personnel compared vis-a-vis what was there in December of 2009, a list of the positions and the total salaries. And the bottom line was there's $1 million less being spent, and I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me either. So I'm trying to...
Approximately a half dozen less folks working up there. So we're doing more with less. I had requested a similar spreadsheet on the board staff, but I did not receive that. But that's okay.
You didn't get that last year?
Bill.
And the year before.
Members, Mr. Rogowski, on this
statement. I do not intend to support it, but I have no questions.
Any other members, any question? Then a motion is in order.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Massana, second by Mr. Burton. I will be signing this without prejudice. All in favor?
All right.
Aye.
No.
No.
Without prejudice.
Yes.
Mr. Ryan, what was your vote?
No.
Mr. Chairman, can we have a recess for a couple of
minutes? No. Tom, I've got to get to my item up by 1:00.
There you go.
And then we've also got to get environment up by 1:30. So.
Right. Can we move to your item next and then come back to this item?
Could you do that?
Please get this one done by 1:30 as well.
No, I'm trying to get this, the count of my budget what numbers here.
How many budget members do we have here?
One, two, three.
Your vote was?
No.
So I've asked that we recess for...
And you don't have the budget number.
Right.
Yeah,
I understand.
That's
why I withdraw the motion. The second, if the sponsor would withdraw the motion and allow us some time to move on to the other items.
Let me just add one thing. I'll take 1 minute. There's two pay plan amendments that could possibly go to the board tonight, as you all know. I think there's a lot of conversations going on by leadership right now, both sides of the aisle, about these two items. I think it would be a mistake to vote this thing down right now, since people are still talking, trying to work things out, trying to put things together. So if we could withdraw the previous vote and allow leadership to continue to talk about this, I think that might be a smart move. I don't know if everybody supports that, but I just want to let you know we are talking in a bipartisan way.
If you want to withdraw the motion,
yes.
I would respect that.
Okay. Right. I'll withdraw my motion.
The motion is withdrawn, so the vote recorded is deleted. Is that a procedural?
I know.
With procedures, fine. Mr. Ryan, you're very familiar with the rules. It's the member's pleasure at this point. All right.
There's a history of as to what the committee, the budget committee in particular, has allowed to happen around the table.
Right.
And if members have agreed.
Yeah, there is an agreement. All right. We have two items left, right? And a clock that keeps on ticking.
I'm calling a meeting of the Committee of Housing and Planning into session. I know the presence of the quorum, in the presence of myself, Legislator Harkin, Legislator Myers, Legislator Rogowski, and Legislator A. Williams. Our purpose of the meeting is in regard to the Urban County federal grant. Ms. Drummond, Mr. Mann, jumping right into it. Okay, in your package, please, you will see a three or four page sheet with the words draft on it. Members, please. This is important. We had requested that the county attorney prepare an amendment to the act, to the committee report, rather, to state certain conditions. And Mr. Williams is not here. Do we know where Mr. Williams is? Did we get Mr. Williams, please? Mr. Williams is going to make the presentation. Where did he go? Linda?
He's probably back in his office. He left.
I hope not. He was making the presentation.
He's gone.
I think we can
get
through with
that. I'll allow Norman to.
Okay. Ms. Drummond, then, would you please present what it is you understand that we have done here?
Okay. At the request of the board following last week's meeting, we did meet with the county attorney and his staff to make an amendment to the act to bring the act in compliance with the language of the stipulation related to having municipalities to do additional actions so that it's more specific to their obligations to affirmatively further fair housing. Bob, you want to walk through the actual language? Okay, all right. So on the act itself, there is a new section 3 that now reads, prior to disbursement of any grant funds received by the county under the application authorized hereby, any recipient must commit in writing to affirmatively further fair housing, AFFH, within its borders. Pursuant thereto, such recipient shall agree to certify in writing to the county that it is in compliance with the following terms and conditions as appropriate in connection with its commitment to affirmatively further fair housing. A, ban local residency requirements and preferences and other selection preferences that do not AFFH, except to the extent preferences are permitted by HUD. B, eligible communities shall offer to the County of Westchester a right of first refusal to retain and or purchase any and all land acquired in REM to be used for housing that AFFH. And C, actively further implementation of the settlement agreement and order in the United States of America, ex-REL. Anti-Discrimination Center of Metro New York, Inc. versus Westchester County, New York, through recipients, land use regulations, and other affirmative measures to assist development of affordable housing.
Yes, sorry, guys.
That sounds pretty comprehensive, but I...
Mr. Kasky, excuse me. I want to just make the point. We have to blue sheet this item. The blue sheet deadline is 1 p.m.
There is a requirement, if I understood you right, Norma, if a municipality is going to plan to sell land, they have to offer the county a right of first refusal to purchase for the purpose of the county pursuing the housing. Is that mm-hmm. is that understand? Now that I assume is I've never heard. I mean, this is a brand new.
It's in the STIP.
Well, okay, it's in the STIP, but I mean, right now, I mean, there may be one. I don't know if any municipality has a local law on their books, which if their town board or city board is going to sell land, they've given the county the right of first refusal. Does that exist anywhere in any of our local municipalities? Are you aware? So, okay, nobody has this. So now in the stipulation that the federal government, the county signed, we committed that the municipalities will pass this kind of law? I mean, I don't recall, but is that a commitment? How could we even make that commitment in the stipulation? I don't recall that language, but I'm just saying, the next step is, have you talked to the municipalities? Are they, I mean, this seems like a whole brand new issue. Have you had any conversation with municipalities? Have they signed off on this through the Municipal Official Association or some mechanism? Are they aware of this?
Yeah. This is important.
I mean, we may need to do this, but it's just like the first time I've heard this.
Well, Mr. Orr.
It's kind of a chicken and egg thing here, because we are still working on a new draft or a revised draft of the implementation plan. The implementation plan that we submitted gave municipalities until January 30th, 2011 to abide by the implementation plan. And it was our understanding, and that's why we sent the legislation down, that as long as HUD, or as long as that implementation plan finally gets approved, that for 2010, municipalities would not be obligated to do that, and we would be able to award CBDG contracts. The reason we sent this down before the implementation, because now obviously what could happen between now and March 12th when the implementation plan gets its final approval, if HUD and the monitor say, no, we want this to take effect immediately, then what is in this letter would have to be in every contract when the funding is awarded at the Board of A&C. And that is why we felt it was okay to send this down for approval, because you are on a hard deadline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we, with the understanding that we are not going to award any of this money with any contracts until we've gotten the final sign-off on the implementation plan, and we would abide by whatever that says regarding the use of the CBDG funds in 2010.
I said, well, if I can, Mr. Chair, if I recall, I was one of the ones who said, you know, we need to learn our lessons from the past, and so the requirement that the municipalities make a certification, I mean, the first paragraph here, make a certification, and is give us a little more comfort in our underwriting that we're getting these certifications. I think that is appropriate. The next step now, they're going beyond that, and if you're saying this is something that will be in our implementation plan, this requirement that the towns and villages and cities offer us as right of first refusal.
As you recall, I don't think we have much option based on what that stipulation...
Well, I guess there's a stipulation... I mean,
yeah, it does. I think they voted against it as well.
Well, I did, but the stipulation... I mean, that may be another reason that...
Yeah.
It
was in my speech.
Municipalities have to pass that right of first refusal legislation.
Correct.
And if any municipality doesn't, I mean...
They're out.
Correct. They're out of the...
The question is, will there be a one-year grace period? That's really what it's down to. And allow the municipalities to digest this and decide whether they want to do it or not.
We're running real close to time.
Is there any judgment that we could possibly amend this to say acquired in rem, which is appropriate for housing? I mean, we don't want to see something where, you know, a person has a wetland that they stop paying taxes on because the town won't let them build on it, and now all of a sudden they have to offer it to the county, and we say...
The answer is the words are already in there. As appropriate follows the words, terms and conditions, just above the subdivisions, and that tracks the language of the stipulation.
Pursuant? I'm sorry, the word?
Just above A, the last pursuant there too.
Okay.
Such recipient shall agree to certify in writing to the county that it is in compliance with the foregoing terms and conditions as appropriate.
So you think that applies to A, B, and C as well?
Yes.
You don't have to say as appropriate over and over again. Okay. Mr. Chairman, on language, can I suggest that the language should be parallel? This is just wordsmithing. Pursuant, such recipients shall agree to certify in writing as appropriate A, ban, B should say offer, C is okay because it says actively further, but but B says eligible community shall offer, so it really should say offer.
Well,
where the community, where an eligible community, comma,
A, B, and
offer.
C, A, B, and C track exactly.
No, I'm not changing the I'm not changing the language.
Let me explain why that is. A, B, and C track the language of the stipulation. The words.
I'm wordsmithing. I'm just trying to make it a declarative sentence.
Words were added because of certain concerns. For example, in B, there was an issue about some communities who are not eligible. Do not want to offer that first right of refusal. And that's why the words eligible communities were added there.
Well, shouldn't that apply to all three? Eligible communities?
Well, again, we're tracking the language. No, that was specifically added to B because of the concern about the communities that are not eligible and do not want to give the right of first
right
refusal.
But
other
what I'm saying is reasons. A and C do not have a subject of a sentence. B is an individual sentence by itself. I'm just talking grammar. I'm not talking substance. I just want to see a parallel language. Okay? A says ban. C says actively further. B says eligible community shall offer.
Yeah, the words eligible community shall were added for a specific reason.
So we're not
reason.
Worried about grammar here. We're just going to...
All right, Tom.
You just want to reword it.
I mean, yeah, Tom. I mean, unless there's a need for doing this, I'm very concerned about our time deadline.
Well, I think statute should be drafted
well within
in England.
Reached at this point.
Because we added the words as appropriate, which apply to all
right.
three anyway. You could probably just drop those three words.
Would that be satisfactory?
Drop what three words? Eligible communities.
Eligible communities. Yeah. Right.
I was just going to say, where an eligible community, comma, shall.
Well, that's now we're getting to the commas.
This is wordsmithing. That's
Tom. Tom, I'm sorry. Look, we're on the nose right now.
Do you want that to be a blue sheet?
Mr. Kaplan.
Thank you, sir. Right to the point. First, CDBG allocations in the three programs per capita. How is the formulation done dollar wise?
In terms of
dollars
distribution
that
or revenue.
Revenue
to the consortium is based on the age of the housing stock within the eligible communities. It's the population, and it's the job creation, job loss.
Community,
it's census data.
Got communication. Municipality or two decides to pull out then of the consortium at this point.
They cannot. No existing community in the consortium can pull out until May 1st, 2012.
Because of the three-year.
The three-year.
So whether they received a grant under 09 or not, they're in the consortium.
Correct.
Okay. And their first date to pull out is what date?
May 1st, 2012.
Okay. Second question. The terms of the agreement, the four-cornered document that we agreed to, has an end date to it, various provisions and the like. Under the language that we're being asked to approve here, it's to ban local residency requirements and preferences under other selection preferences, not firmly further fair housing. There is no reference whatsoever to the base agreement that we agreed to or any timeliness. Is this forever more that they, once they agree to this, can they ever change these terms? What talk to me about, does this ever sunset, this banning, the three words, the banning, the act, the furthering, and the offering?
Well, wouldn't it be tied to the funding?
Funding for this
group. Well, is it just tied to this? In other words, don't they then enact local legislation to ban local residency requirements? If we take this money, we will then pass legislation which will ban local residency requirements. We can never provide firefighter-only housing.
That's why the words...
It says except negotiated by HUD.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but if I understand that. But they don't want that qualification on their own. That means forevermore they can never, ever...
This is just for the application for this grant cycle.
Got it. But it's saying it doesn't... There's no... there's no language here. It's period. It doesn't ever say, however, when the monitor goes away and the agreement is effectuated.
Prior
to
the stipulation, grant.
What's that?
Stipulation is neither.
Stipulation is separate. That question is
but
separate.
This, what if assume that, I assume this is not an issue. If a community in the next 2 years, this within this cycle, the next two-thirds, chooses not to receive any dollars from CDBG, they're still in the consortium. They can't get out until May 1st, 2012. They're still in a consortium. They do not have to do any of these things because they're not receiving a disbursement of any of these funds under that example. Correct. Nothing they need to do. And then they get to decide whether they want to continue thereafter. Correct. If, however, Yorktown is an example, who is slated to receive $125,000 as recommended next year, to receive it, Yorktown would have to enact, I assume, certain legislation that would effectuate the terms under this agreement, right, before they can receive these funds.
If that's under this year's thing, this is a one-year thing, right?
No. Yeah, this is
just... No, but I'm saying a year from that.
You'd have to talk the same language.
You'd be the same language, correct. So can the ban local residency requirement be only during the terms that they participate in the consortium?
For the purposes of this act,
right?
Yes, but not necessarily of the stipulation.
Settlement right. Might be different.
Right. They're still going to get. Well, I'm not going to.
So
get it
the little
comment.
Toe that pulls them in is the receipt of the disbursement from us and the receipt of the CDBG monies
for this site for this year.
Legislatively.
Yeah, but
and that if a community chooses, looks at this and says, nah, it's just too much trouble, it's not worth it, we don't have to do it, they would then be foregoing CDBG monies under this cycle and potentially a year from now if, in fact, that was legislation that's needed.
But if they do anything else with the county,
correct. I understand.
Then this language is going to jump in.
There's a legacy. We understand all that. However,
Mr. Capitalist makes the drafting point. Should there be something in here that says that?
Well, that's one point. I'm going to the bigger picture, which is there's going to be a day that the monitor is, we've fulfilled the terms of the agreement, assuming good faith, economics, economic conditions, and the like. The units are built, the money is gone. We've done everything we could possibly do at that point. Can the local communities put in their language when they effectuate, they want to take the monies, they want to live up to the law, they want to further fair and affordable housing during the provision that the tie-in is there. Can they put in to their local legislation that we, during while the county is still under federal auspices, while that agreement is still in pursuit of, or is this forevermore once they've made these changes? They, even if they never participate in CDBG, they can never have local residency requirements for housing in their community.
I think you just have to look at this act. This legislation is just for this cycle, for these contracts that come down under this funding mechanism. All those other issues have to be answered looking at the whole settlement and looking at the stipulation.
Correct.
And they can't be answered shortly.
And honestly, they may not be answered except back in a court of law.
Right.
Because, you know, we don't know. Even now, as we're redoing the implementation plan, you know, we're getting certain messages. But at some point, the county may not be willing to go as far as required, or municipalities may not be willing to go, which is more likely, as far as required.
Right.
In which case, we may hear back from HUD and the monitor that we have to go further. And then that becomes a question for all 17 of you, as well as the
right.
county executive.
Yes.
How far do we push that? So, I have some language. Let me try it. Is it appropriate to put in some language in here that says for the term of the stipulation? Would that do it?
But they're separate. They're separate.
For the term
it's the term of the. It's for the term of the grant cycle.
But to that point,
no, that's not what this is saying.
That's not what it's saying. That's what I'm
that's
saying.
His point. He's correct.
You know,
there's no sunset in.
You're not banning. You know, if during the term until May 1st, April 30th. How many days in April? April 30th, 2012. At that point, a community says, we'll take CDBG, we will ban local residency requirements. But starting on May 1st, 2012, we're going to void that local law. We're going to amend it. We're going to repeal it. Because we don't expect to participate in it. We're going to even pull out of the consortium. Or if we're in the consortium, we're not putting in an application for any money at that particular point. Can they do so? Can they just do these things, these verbs, for the period under which they're in the consortium and then change it so that they're no longer doing these things for a period in the future? or are they forevermore?
The language that's here in the Act will be incorporated into the agreement that each municipality may have to take the funds.
Right.
So there'll be a provision. We added to that agreement, which is an agreement they sign now when they get the funds. This provision, these provisions will be added to that for that purpose.
Can we put in there as long as they're a member of the consortium, for example?
I would say for the duration of the grant cycle.
That's fine, too.
That's the more precise language.
But based on what happened to the county last year, I think a municipality would be treading on very thin ice if they did something as cute as that. Then repealed it after they took the money. I got to believe that HUD or somebody would step in. They might direct it. I don't know if they'll sue us. They might sue that
municipality. Which, Mr. Chairman, leads back in circuitous logic, then means that each of us need to have a very interesting discussion with each municipality.
That's correct.
Every one of the municipalities in the consortium need to decide whether, in fact, A, they want to receive disbursements in the next 2 years, and B, whether they want to stay in the consortium on a going forward basis, which hurts, again, nobody really cares, but it hurts the receipt of federal dollars into the community, which hurts that whole effort, which hurts the consortium, because on some kind of per capita basis or some formulaic basis, there'll be less dollars available for the other programs. But so be it. Each community has to decide
what's in their interest. Maybe it will be helpful. Can we add some language? If your language would be helpful on this, I really would like to. I'm done, Bill.
Thank you.
How about if we added some language at the end that says, under such terms and conditions as approved by the county attorney, which then gives them the discretion to negotiate this whole point out and let the administration deal with the communities. This way, we don't have to put some language
in. I would like to go in the other direction if I can.
I'm just trying to move this along.
When I raised the issue, I wanted the towns to certify to help us. But I was thinking, frankly, that the municipalities hereby certify that they are taking sex appropriate actions as necessary to further affordable housing. You know,
period.
Because, I mean, maybe it's in there. I don't recall all these local preferences and this. I mean, those are details. The certification that they're working on it. I might be able to support that. I'm going to have a lot more trouble if the certification means, and unless it's stuff that I write the snip, but I don't remember, you know, banning local preferences and doing this and doing that.
How about C?
Are you okay with just paragraph C?
I wanted
a general certification that they're working on it.
How about C with the edited language under such terms and conditions?
What is C by the county? Just 1, 2, and 3.
The next page. Three C. Does that do it?
That's what I was looking for.
And then add the language under such terms and conditions as approved by the county attorney. Right. So we're authorizing the county attorney to work it out.
I might be able to support it.
Does that solve it?
Yeah.
Does that work?
That was my intent.
We're going to delete A, 3A.
Is that appropriate working through?
This clause is not necessary for the legislation.
Understood.
For the application.
Understood.
So this is your choice, what you want to put in here.
We're not contradicting ourselves, nor are we impinging on the implementation.
No.
All right, Tom, would you then, Marty, right,
so then
confirm
Marty,
what you're talking about?
Yeah, because, I mean, let me just review. The fact is, you know, the stipulation to the county, we're told, because we need to actively further implementation. That we need. So we just pass that burden onto the towns. You certify that you're actively further implementation.
And then we're going to delete the letter C. So it just goes on to read, pursuant thereto, such recipient shall agree to certify in writing to the county that it is in compliance with the following terms and conditions as appropriate in connection with its commitment to AFFH.
Okay.
That it will actively further. What verb do you want to use?
That it will actively further.
Yeah, in the future.
That it will actively further implementation, and then add at the end the language under such terms and conditions as approved by the county attorney. And then the county attorney can work on the sunsets and stuff like that within what it deems to be the appropriate terms under these stipulations.
Yeah, brief comment to the chairs. It then appropriately takes the discussion off of this table and puts it on the table of the different communities, which is where it belongs, because they're the recipient of the dollars. We're passed through. So if Yorktown or ABC community wants to, understands the terms under the stipulation that they need to get, that's fair. That's their decision. But for us to then to have A and B in here, it's the point where mathematically Right. Very few of us, many of us cannot sign on to this agreement because it makes a decision at this table when, in fact, our argument is
one last thing.
Can we also put in,
I'm giving the
we're an eligible community? Well, losing that language, we're an eligible community. How about if we were to put that in? Pursuant thereto, such recipient, comma, we're an eligible community, comma. Does that work?
The eligible community issue related to the first part of refusal.
It didn't relate to C as well.
That's right, all.
So yeah. Can we move it in there? Such recipient, comma, we're an eligible community.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Comma.
Through the chairs, what does that mean?
That's eligible community is defined in the stipulation as a community that's...
The 31 communities.
The 31.
Right.
It goes without saying.
Yeah.
Well, no, but okay. Right?
Okay. Does that work?
All right.
Have we memorialized this now?
Except, wait a second, to that point, though. So if you're not a 31, you don't, I mean, ironically they do, but you don't have to then affirmatively further implementation of the settlement agreement because you're not one of those communities? Wouldn't we want everyone to?
Well, remember, you're Mount Vernon.
So why would you just put those?
Under the stipulation, under CDBG.
Right, we're just talking about CDBG.
I wouldn't put that qualification, just leave it. Okay.
It applies to everybody.
Everybody. So the language is deleted.
All right. Are we in agreement?
Yeah. So we're an eligible community coming back out.
Any other discussions on this matter? Because we now have the entire CDBG package with this amendment to it. Any other discussion?
So moved.
If not, on behalf of, may I have a motion on behalf of housing and planning?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Hart. Second by Mrs. Williams.
Moved by Mr. Benanti.
Second.
Second by Ms. Myers.
On behalf of both committees, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. We will complete the meeting of the House of Representatives. All in favor say aye.
All right. We have one final item.
By the way.
The fossil fuel item, Mr. Chairman, is that the fossil fuel item is having its language reworked.
Right.
And
we
will have that
chance
to deal with that.
All right.
Mr.
Please just leave it on your agenda.
You pulled it off?
Yeah. All right. Mr. Chair, before we adjourn, I spoke to the chair of the board. That item that we had earlier relating to the pay plan amendment, we'd like to put that back on, if we may.
All right.
I'd like to move it.
I'll second it.
All right. Move by Mr. Mazzano, second by Mr. Benanti. Again, the vote that we rescinded before on the pay plan amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to make a statement. I believe that the county executive is the head of his department and has a right to use his budget the way he sees fit. I may disagree with the way he's using his monies, and I reserve the right to criticize the way he's using his monies. But I am seconding this for the purpose of giving it an opportunity for the board to have a discussion.
I have to comment. I certainly agree that the county exec can reorganize and create title, you know, set up the way he wants. That's his privilege and prerogative. But when it comes to setting salaries, the reason it's before this board is that we do have a responsibility. The prior director of communications, I recall, was 137. And so when the county exec's asking for a pay increase, that to me doesn't go to the table of organization. He can do whatever he wants. Like, God bless him. He won the election. He set it up. But when it comes to, if you want to pay him $300,000, I mean, so I'm saying we do have a role in setting the salaries.
I think those are the two arguments.
Okay.
One for, one against.
Mr. Harkin,
I would just like to echo what Legislator Rakowski said. If you recall last year when there was contemplation about raising the salaries of certain management personnel, we had a public hearing and we had people out the hall voicing opposition to that. That opposition does not change when the person who sits in the chair on the ninth floor changes. In fact, there were members of the current administration now who pilloried this body for even having a public hearing to discuss that. You know, people in my district are not sending me happy emails saying they're getting $20,000 raises. I'm going to oppose this. I think any raises during this time are not what our constituents are looking for. And with all due respect, I'm opposing this.
Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Alvarado. I just have 2 points. One is procedural. And let me just put this on the record. We had an item before us earlier in the meeting. There was a motion to take action on the item. There was a second. There was maybe a limited discussion, but there was an opportunity for discussion. There then was a vote. That item failed 5-2.
No, it was tied 4-4.
It was tied 4-4. Okay.
And with all due respect.
Right. Still failed.
But the point
the
is...
The chairman of the board was trying to make his way in to vote. I mean, let's be fair here. I mean, the vote was not very clear. The chairman was working his way to the meeting.
Okay, well, I have the floor. The point is that based on the membership around the table, the item was not approved. There are a number of different things that can be done. You certainly, as a courtesy, can keep the vote open and allow for members to come in. You can do that. However, that was not done. Secondly, there is, and I mentioned this before, and there is a history, but I sit here and I need someone to show me what rule of procedure is relied upon where you make a motion to move an item, second it, vote on that, and all of a sudden discussion goes to someone who says, well, I want to suggest that somebody withdraw the initial motion in the first place. This is a motion that has been acted on. And this is a committee. It's not the full board. But it's one of the charter committees of this board. But it wouldn't matter whether it was that or a special committee. There are rules of procedure that have to be followed. And I, for one, right now, at almost 20 after 1, I would like at some point today maybe somebody show me the rule of procedure that our committees rely upon when they take a vote. Someone around the table isn't real happy with the result and suggests, well, pull the motion. No, the motion's been made and seconded and there has been a vote. That's the procedural item. I just put it up on the table for people to perhaps kind of nibble at over lunchtime.
I accepted the withdrawn motion.
This is my point. This is my point. This is exactly my point. What is the procedure being followed where chairs of committees are even put in the position to make a decision to accept it or not? Right. And I think that what we have to do is start looking carefully at the rule. There are reasons why there are rules. Someday, there'll be an important decision around here. It may be made, and there may be people around this table who say, that was made inappropriately, and we could find that there are legal challenges to what we do.
Right.
This budget committee, once again, is a committee within the committee system. It is not the full board, but its actions are extremely important, and its actions take on a legal weight. Now, that's procedural. Secondly, I'm voting against this because, as Mr. Rogalski stated, I don't think the measure really is how many heads are now in the operation, or whether or not we're within budget. This, to me, is a salary question on two positions. I am voting in opposition to these because I believe that the proposed increases are excessive. And if the recorder didn't pick that up, let me say it again. The increases are excessive. The arguments that more work is being done, what we have seen over the last few years, that doesn't hold any water in this government. That there are new responsibilities being taken on, or somebody left and we have to pick up the slack, or there is a reorganization, those types of things were not the stepping stones to getting to where you might have gone with, whether they were board decisions or they were full decisions for the managerial people of this government. So I think that once again we're looking at positions. There are salaries that attach to these positions based on the responsibilities of the jobs. I for one have not been shown where those responsibilities have changed so much to warrant the increases. And my good friend Mr. Harkham here appropriately pointed out that this is also in the context of, from what we have heard, a community of Westchester that is not at this particular moment buying increases as a real tough economy is still showing its impact on the workforce with people remaining at the same salary, some having gone through cuts and others having lost their jobs completely. So, for those reasons, which I am free to do so, I am voting against this.
Mr. Weiser.
Mr. Chair, two things. Let me just deal with the procedural item first. I recognize exactly what Legislator Ryan says, and he probably makes a good point. So let me make a suggestion so we can stay procedurally pure, okay? If we want to allow that 4-4 vote to stand so we can keep procedurally pure, I will make a second motion to reconsider that. I believe Mr. Abernathy will second that.
Second.
That'd be appropriate.
We can then reconsider, we can do a vote to reconsider that and put it back here on the table again. And that way everyone's doing everything legally properly, and I think that'll make everybody happy.
Mr. Mazzano points out a procedure within Robert's rules. If our rules don't speak to it specifically, the default is Robert's rules. He points to a procedure that we can follow.
All right. So motion to reconsider, seconded by Mr. Abernathy. On the motion, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Without prejudice.
No.
Oh,
motion to reconsider.
This is just the motion to reconsider.
And I say no.
No. All right.
Aye.
So the ayes, raise your hand. And,
To reconsider?
To reconsider.
Yeah, to reconsider. All right.
All committee members.
All right, yeah. And then the noes are four. All right, so motion passes.
So now I'm sitting back here in the committee.
Yeah.
So I will move the legislation once again.
Legislation is moved once again. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Abernathy. On the motion, again, properly.
Can I make one point on the merits? I reckon it was an interesting debate here, very quick. Everybody was very succinct, so I'll be succinct. I do think Legislator Abernathy and the legislators on the other side of this table make good points. There are two sides to this issue. I tend to think that both the chairman of the Board of Legislators and the county executive, if they feel that this is the way they would like to run their internal administration, these are a pay plan amendment, meaning amending the pay within their department. If they both feel that that's what they need, there's two pending out there for our board, possibly tonight. I would like to work with both leaders to arrive at what they think to best run their shops. But I understand your point. We do. You're right. We have a say in this, and it could be no. So either everyone knows this issue. You're either yes or no tonight on these types of pay plan issues. I tend to be yes. Let the two leaders run the departments based on the salaries they seem fit. But we can have that debate tonight on the floor. I think it's best there. I hope we can all vote this out now. Even if you're against this, I would ask some people to vote without prejudice so we can have a vote tonight. We have two things, both pending tonight, that maybe we could work through.
Yeah. And I will vote without prejudice as chairman of the committee. Okay, on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Without prejudice.
Without prejudice?
Yeah.
Opposed? All right.
Thank you.
Motion passes. We have some minutes, people. When Mr. Ragazzi chairs the committee, you want to move those minutes, Mr.
Sure.
Vice Chairman?
So moved. You remember what happened? Burned out.
All right, is there a second? All right, move the second in on the minutes. On the favor?
Aye.
We are, but opposed.
There are no other minutes.
I got to do what I got to do.
I Environment Committee will meet in 2 minutes.
We stand adjourned.
Sally, I'll be right back. I got to get my phone. Environment will meet in 2 minutes. If you're on Environment, I'll just come right back.
I think I was more articulate last time.
I doubt we're
going to
make it.
But I joined the...
This one? Sorry, I'm just looking for a final...
Which one? I think it was 9 of us. I think it was 6 to 4.
Right. It was 4-4. When he came and made it 9.
I reserve my right to vote. Good point, Bill. I had to quickly think of something.
I wasn't going to offer it. But you're absolutely right. And it's got to be done that
way. I didn't want to do frankly, I'll just say, I thought the heads had been counted on that. I didn't know the heads were uncounted. You know what I mean?
Wait, what is this?
No, I said just speak forevermore.
No, I didn't
know. What leader should we repeal the law?
My heads were counted. Me, I was the only one here.
Hey, Brandon.